Recording's now started.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's IRD call on Monday the 15th of March, we have Jeremy Hitchcock, Ram Mohan, who seems to have temporarily disconnected, Yun Kang Yao, James Galvin, Avery Doria. From staff we have Dave Piscatello, Steve Sheng, Francisco Arias, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We also have apologies from Rafik Damek and from Ray Plazak. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Steve.
Thank you, and welcome to today's IRD call on March 15th. And thank you for your participation, especially for those of you calling in at late night from Asia. This is the first time I organized a call, so my apologies. In the last call, since we're rotating our times for call and not all the participants were able to join the call last week, 2 weeks ago, so I think our first kind of give a summary of our discussion 2 weeks ago. And then, Jeremy, I'm going to give the mic to you to organize the meeting. Is that okay?
That's great.
Okay.
Take it away.
I'm sorry, what?
Take it away.
Oh, okay. So 2 weeks ago, we had a phone call. And there are a couple of things we discussed. I'm just going to highlight the key issues. So one of the questions that the members, participants on the call discussed is to whether require a must-be-present representation of the Whois data. And so in the past, we have different opinions. So on one side, basically, is requiring a must-be-present representation may present a barrier of entry to those who does not the must-be-present language, whether that language be English or French or whatever. So that's one opinion. The other opinion is saying basically requiring a must-be-present language representation may be necessary to contact registrants from different countries. So those are the two opinions in the room, and we don't have agreements. So Edmund noted that the discussion is maybe a useful way forward would be to consider some kind of backward compatibility with ASCII. So today, most of the if not all the Whois information is in ASCII. So going into internationalized registration data, I was wondering maybe a more useful way to consider some kind of backward compatibility. Some other members suggested other ways. So, for example, one option is not requiring registrants to input English or Roman characters, but maybe requiring registrars to publish points of contact to deal with translation issues. So that's one option. Another option would be just to ask the registrars themselves to perform translation. And I think at the meeting, some suggested maybe a good next step forward is just to list all the available options on the table and maybe deliberate on the pros and cons of each of them. So a third area that we discussed is the UPU standard for international addressing. And I provided, and Edmund asked us to provide some background documents more on this UPU standards. So I sent the earlier document late this morning. My apologies. So those So those where we are in terms of discussion. So Jeremy?
Sorry, I keep switching. This is Jeremy. Sorry, I keep switching back and forth on mute. Could you, Steve, maybe go over quickly the UPU standard just in case people aren't too familiar with it and didn't get a chance to review it, and we can discuss its merits of the backwards compatibility as well afterwards?
Sure. So the UPU standard is a standard by the Universal Postal Union on formatting of an international address. So what it says is when sending letters, sending mails internationally, they govern that their standard define the character set to be used. So essentially it's saying the addressee's address be worded should be written legibly in Roman letters and Arabic numerals. If other letters and figures are used in the country of destination, it shall be recommended that the address be given also in these letters and numerals. So essentially saying international mails, the address should be written in Roman letters and Arabic numerals. And in addition, if there's an additional language, for example, if a mail was sent to China or sent to Japan or sent to India, where they have a local language, the addressee can also put their address, the sender can also put the addressee's address in the local language as well. So that's roughly the UPU standard for formatting international address. This is Article 123.3.3. Another UPU international addressing standard is called S42, called the International Postal Address Component and Templates. It essentially defines a common list of international name and address elements and provide template languages, both a natural language and an XML language schema for computer processing. So it essentially kind of standardizes, you know, when sending mail internationally, what are the fields needs to be there, and what are the definitions for each field. And it's up to each member country to approve the standard and implement the template for that standard to become part of the S42. So those are the two UPU standards that might be of interest for the working group. Thanks.
This is Jeremy. So a couple things that seem to jump out at me, at least, is that the UP standard makes the ASCII character representation a requirement, and the local script is optional. Is that correct, Steve?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And the second thing that kind of jumps out based on discussions that we've had before is the mixing of scripts in a particular single address. And it sounds like that a single script is permitted for a particular address representation. And that's also correct?
I'm not certain about the mixing of scripts. I don't think the UPU standards specify that.
Okay.
Yeah. Generally, the postal the address is very flexible. The postmen are really good finding the addresses. But
it's the human component of the equation, though, I think that makes it so flexible. So this is Jeremy again. What's kind of people's initial feedback of the UPU standard as a potential to be applied for addressing information? People have, is this something that we should should look at, not look at? What are some pros and cons of potentially adopting this as kind of a standard that we point to?
This is Dave Piscitello. The original idea of looking at the UPU standard was not so much to see if there is an alternative schema, so to speak, of collecting information that would be contact information, but trying to understand how they dealt with with local languages, and you know, in their transport. So in the original webinar I gave, I mentioned that this was an example of a communications provider that essentially said, you must have Roman letters and Arabic numerals, but you may have contact information in an alternative, if that is also beneficial. And it was simply to point out that that some people do in fact say, well, there's something that's mandatory, and that was the only real purpose in calling attention to the UPU. Now, if we think that there's something else that we need to consider, that's fine. But I just wanted to make certain that the original intent was clear.
Okay.
So this is this is Jim Galvin. So to use that as a basis for my comment, I don't think that the UPU standard should be used as a reason to suggest that there's any kind of a base requirement for a single international language for WHOIS information. The problem that I have, the reason why I think that is because the UPU standard really applies more in a peer-to-peer relationship, if you will. The problem is the WHOIS model is different. It's a one-to-many relationship. And so I think it's harder to say that the entire world needs to have a single language. I mean, here with the UPU standard, you're dealing with, just the country of origin and country of destination. And you don't have that information readily available to you when you're using a WHOIS type service or protocol.
Aubrey, can I comment?
Well, in one sense,
sure.
To Jim's, I think I respectfully disagree. I think you are in this as well as in anything in a one-to-many. In other words, it is one sender, and yes, each instance may just be one-to-one, but that I actually would very much support using something like this standard. I think one thing, when you get into the discussions of you're trying to force Latin down everybody's throat, you basically have an internationally accepted agreement with which you say, no, this is just the right way of doing it. I think the base requirement of having something that anyone in the world can understand is valid, and I think the idea of having something that also those who only have the local can also understand if they wish is a really good idea. So while I'm not saying that we necessarily need to adopt it, in total, because I haven't, read the whole standard and there may be bits and pieces that don't fit, I think basing what we do on this is a seriously good idea that we should consider.
Yeah. This is Dave again. I wanted to point out that there are also some nuances that don't necessarily translate from postal mail to WHOIS. One is that in some respects we have some unique information that doesn't appear in a letter. For example, sponsoring registrar. I mean, there is no other than the postal stamp. There is no real indication of who the sponsoring registrar is, and so when we say it would be nice to have some information mandatorily in certain character sets, that's I think one part of the topic we have to look at. But then the question is, Are we talking about all the information? Are we talking about information that the registrar provides, information that the registrant provides, and then even in the context of information the registrant provides, what of that information would the registrant be required to provide in the sort of mandatory language, and what would the registrar be able to provide? So it maybe staff could sit down and kind of pull out all these questions and try to draw the the questions that innate from the parent question here. I have some sympathies with the notion that people who don't know English or don't know Roman Roman characters being in some respect hamstrung, but there's a strong observation that many of those people probably aren't in the domain world yet, and maybe there's a transition where we learn a little bit by having ASCII remain mandatory for some time, but also start to consider ways to expand into other languages. I think there's a lot of permutations here, and what's promising is that we're getting an awful lot of good perspectives in this working group, which is what we had originally hoped for.
So this is Jim Galvin. Let me respond to Avery and Dave here in the following way. I want to focus on the particular contact information about a registrant or about the domain. I mean, as Dave says, there may very well be, and in fact, I think that there is some information that can be standardized in very very significant ways, like the registrar identifier, for example. Could certainly be required to be in one format, one script, one kind of identifier. When I think about the Postal Service and I think about what happens when people send letters, if a letter is going to stay within a certain country and within that locale, then you get to use just your own local language. And I think that applies to the vast majority of messages. And so the idea that we're going to require the entire world to put things in one script just seems doesn't seem quite international to me. Is there a way for us to provide a means for information that a registrant might enter in their local script that is then stored out there? Is there a way for us to provide for that to become some international format that might be interesting to talk about, and Steve had put a couple of ideas out there. So I think, Avery, I guess maybe if I were to try and identify the one point, I guess I want to clarify one point from you and figure out if this is really a point where we disagree. I mean, are you suggesting that you think there should be a single script which all registration information has to appear in? Or are you allowing for the possibility that these things might be in two forms, and we just haven't talked about how we get it into both forms yet?
Yes. I am arguing that there has to be one mandatory form, and just like the UN says, all business with the UN has to be done in English or French, and other languages can follow. I think that all who is information needs to be in one and should optionally include another. So basically, following the sort of principle of the standard, obviously the details, like I said, would be different, but the principle saying that Latin characters, or in our case, ASCII characters, need to be the base standard, that everything has a listing in. And that for the purposes of local usage, that when there are registrants who don't have Latin, not registrants, but users who don't have Latin, I expect that the registrants, we're saying, need to have some way of doing Latin, or the registrar needs to provide them sort of translation facility. I don't really care at the moment how it gets into ASCII character, or an equivalent gets into ASCII, but that the user should have the ability, both if they're a local user, to get that information in what is known locally without needing to know ASCII, and that the international user or whoever needs that information should be able to get that information without needing to know the local language. So, yes, I'm saying at least one is required and one is optional. I think making them both required might be difficult, although I'd have probably no problem going there.
So one final comment for me then. The only observation I make, I mean, I have some sympathy for the UN sort of principle. I really do. My observation about it as compared to the Internet community is I think the Internet community is much larger than the UN community. And so I just have concerns about how well that principle scales. And I'll just put that point out there, and then we'll just sort of wait and boo.
Okay,
wait and see where the discussion takes us.
If I could counter that for a second, I actually disagree with that completely, unless we're including the interplanetary network in the Internet community. I think there are plenty of nations within the UN that barely have an Internet presence yet. So I think that the Internet has not quite reached as far as the UN reached, but this is a philosophical difference. I just wanted to counter that.
This is Jeremy. Jim, would you have a way of articulating what the requirement base is? I guess you would mostly say that contact information could be represented in any particular language, and there'd be multiple encodings or a single encoding, or what sort of rule set would you use to define kind of the if not the UPU, something else?
Well, let's see. If I understand your question, I mean, obviously the first requirement would be that the WHOIS information would need to be tagged with whatever script it's in, which is certainly something that doesn't exist today. But I think what I'm suggesting is that, you know, local registrants should be able to use whatever their local accepted language is. The act of translation, so that it's generally readable, I think the parties that need that translation should be obligated to find a way to cause that to come into existence.
So, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, of whether a registrant decides a language script, and if a registrant, let's say, in a country with a standard language or an official language, let's say, in France, if I decide to use a different language set, even though it's not the official language, am I permitted to do that? Is it based on the registrant? Because you'd presumably get into cases where the local registrant could choose a language script that the presiding mail system would not accept or understand or be able to process. And looking at the spirit of the contact information, which is to presumably identify that the geographic location of that person, or send them documentation by courier or something like that. I'm wondering if there's a conflict in the flexibility given to a particular registrant, in different scenarios.
Well, obviously a registrant would be limited by what their registrar offers, so they would need to seek out a registrar that supports them in the way in which they want to be supported. So are you asking me what are the requirements on a registrar, or what are the permissions on a registrar?
It would be the permissions on a registrar. If a registrar is an international entity and is serving customers in different countries, does that entity need to have essentially a lookup of what scripts are permitted in what countries? And I think that's it's kind of a prevailing question of knowing, of understanding whether a registrant can provide a particular language script.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess I don't want to be hard about what would be the absolute requirements on a registrar. I mean, I think there are several models that are possible, and we need to continue to explore them. Registrars are going to have rules imposed on them from many places. not just ICANN. So in this particular context, if a given country has a requirement that all of its domains or contact information has to be in a certain script, then a registrar that wants to sell to registrants in that particular country would need to, to follow those rules, whatever they are. If a TLD has requirements about, names being in a particular language and contact information being a certain way, then yes, they're going to have to implement those rules too. I don't know. Do we want to have one universal set of rules, or we want to allow those options on registrars or countries to impose rules? I guess I have to think about that some more, and would be interested in hearing what others have to say about that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And again, it's just trying to frame the question of if we're presuming to say that we're creating a standard that is different than what exists out there, it's useful to articulate it in the sense of what are the rules, and if I'm in the United States, so if I use a language set that is essentially not English, not Latin characters, and I drop it in the local post system, it's not going to get delivered, and that's kind of the same thing that's true in either in Arabic script countries or in Cyrillic script countries, that if the UPU standard is what it seems to be, Latin representation seems to work, and it's somewhat of a universal set of identifiable geographic or identifying information. So just understanding the subtleties of why that is a particular standard, I think, is important before going off and saying that maybe there's that's flawed for the internet context. But I something worth discussing and looking at and tearing apart with other members as well to hear different opinions.
Jeremy, this is Dave again. As I listen to the conversation here, one of the things I realize is it's very easy to conflate the impact when we talk about these in the issues generally, because we aren't really focusing on who is impacted by each decision. And I'm wondering if what we need is a matrix that identifies the choices down the column or the row, and across on the column it says impact to user, impact to registrant, impact to registrar, or implication to registrar, impact to registry. And we take for example, requiring Roman characters and Arabic numerals for all fields. So if you look at that, the impact on affiliates today as a registry provider is relatively zero. The impact to the registrar is relatively zero. The impact to the user and to the registrant probably has to do with locality. And so we can maybe tease out what happens in each of these cases. And now we can say, okay, that's in the case, now what if we say that it's essentially a local user choice, whatever language is established by the registrar as one of a set of languages it supports. What are the implications on all the parties? And I think that we get to see perhaps some of the more subtler issues that are hard to quite tease out when we just look at it in one way. And I'll close I know it's going to sound like a frivolous example, but I think it calls attention to internationalization and IDN in particular. I mean, imagine a new TLD that is the applicant that wants to use Klingon, and the purpose is to embrace the language, or if not Klingon, some language that is disappearing in the world but is recognized in Unicode. And the purpose is to embrace a language that is not widely used. Chances are that the majority of that of the community that will use that do not know Roman characters and Arabic letters. And if they don't, perhaps you know, what would be the implication on the users, on the registrar, you know, if we chose to impose certain rules? And I think it would be worth walking through that.
Hey, this is Aubrey. Comment?
Go ahead, Aubrey.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think that's probably a good exercise, but I think we have to add just one complication to it. I think, for example, you said that requiring ASCII would have no impact on the registrars. I think we'd have to consider that, even though I very much support doing it, that if we're requiring it on a registrant, then it might have some feedback impact on a registrar, in that if it's something that's difficult for them to do but must be done, then the registrar incurs the need to find a way to help them do it, whether it's translation service of some sort or what automatic translations or what have you. So I think in doing that, it's not a simple exercise of saying, you know, no real impact on registrars for ASCII, but yes, impact on registrants, but none on users, and so on, so that we understand the implications of requiring it one step down the food chain has an impact on one step up the food chain.
Sure.
This is Jeremy. I do think a matrix is going to be useful, because I think that this in the end is going to come down to a gut feeling, and some people are going to feel one way or another, and having the lines defined will be useful in trying to determine what level of consensus there is for which particular flavor.
Okay. So the staff can take a first pass at compiling that matrix, and then the working group can discuss and add content to that matrix. That sounds like a feasible step forward.
Yeah. One comment to go with the one I made, this is Aubrey again, is it may be good in talking to each and looking at each of those matrices, and I know this complicates things, at looking at primary effect and secondary effect.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of covers and makes you look at not only what are the primary effects to each of these entities, but are there any secondary effects that happen because of effects to someone else?
This is Steve again. Arvi, so what's the difference between, can you give an example of a primary and secondary effect?
Sure.
Just to clarify.
A primary effect, for example, when we answer the question of what is the impact on ASCII for registrar? The impact in a primary sense is there's none. They're already doing it. In a secondary thing, if there is a requirement that registrants produce ASCII, then there's a requirement on registrars to help them do so. So that would be a secondary effect.
Sure. Thank you.
That's a good point.
I guess maybe if you agree, maybe we can, before compiling the matrix, maybe we can determine the rows and columns of that matrix before we fill in more information. So what I'm hearing is Dave, Jeremy, and Avery's suggestion is, so for each row of the column, basically one option that, you know, maybe one option is we leave this to local, a matter registrar dealing with locally, but maybe they provide translation service. So that's one option. Those are the options. On each column are basically the criteria we're evaluating them. And so far what I'm hearing is the criteria are potential impacts to registrars, to registries, to registrant. So for registrars, do we also want to separate out the existing registrars and the potential entrants for IDN registrars? I'm sorry. And for each of those, we consider primary and secondary impact. Am I summarizing the discussion correctly?
This is Jeremy. So you would potentially draw a distinction between truly generic top-level domains and language-centric top-level domains.
Okay.
Am I hearing that question correctly?
Yes, language-centric. You mean ccTLDs?
This is Jeremy. No, things like .cat, which are
okay.
Particular language set.
Okay.
That's an interesting way to slice it apart. What do people think about that?
Well, this is Steve Metallitz. I just wanted to mention that we also would need a column for the users of the Whois data.
Yeah, Aubrey also had said that, and I made a note to make sure that got added, because that is an important distinction of law enforcement intellectual property concerns.
I think it's also, if you're going to look at users, it might be worth just, I'm not certain there's actually going to be a distinction, but automation as a different kind of user, so interactive user and automated user.
Yeah, I think that makes sense as a subset.
And Aubrey, commenting on dividing the two types of registrar, or, you know, the IDN versus not. I don't know that anything different will come out between them, but I think it's an interesting exercise to see if the answers come out different between them. So, yeah, I could support putting in the column, which at first seems sort of redundant, but seems worth checking if it really is redundant.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jim. I mean, I think as a principle, I'm generally in favor of splitting out columns more, because it would be interesting to see if they come out different. I mean, maybe as you're filling out the matrix, something will occur to you as a difference, and you'll want to create additional columns just to call that out. But and I think that would be useful. It would be helpful just to sort of see how that falls out.
Right, which recommends a final column, which is other notes and comments. Other stuff that we find filling it out that doesn't fit into the matrix.
Okay, other notes. Jeremy's previous question about separating gTLDs into the generic and also the language-centric gTLDs?
Well, they're all generic, but if we're talking about we're talking about generic NCCs.
Well, no, some GTLDs are language-centric, too.
Right.
This is Jeremy. It would be the ones that are charter-based that are specifically, officially sponsored, which are not IDNs in the sense where they're not, you know, they've gone through a different track. .asia would be another example, and just they might have adopted language policies that are specific to the purposes that satisfy their charter. So, again, looking for other ways to identify differences, that might be another way to tear things apart.
Okay. So, I can definitely do that. So, is Jian Kang still on the line?
Yes.
Hi, Jian Kang. Thanks. I was wondering. Thank you. I was wondering if you have any thoughts on these, and also just on postal standards and such requiring a must-be-present language, especially in light of your experience in ccTLDs.
So, actually, my comments may be different from your conclusion. From my experience, since UPO is from ITU, ITU is a very strong international standard, is a government-related organization. So their standard has already followed by many countries. So I think the principle of UPO, maybe we can follow it. So for the English and for non-ASCII characters. I support. I think both should be applied. So first, the local language will be entered or inputted by the registrant. So if the registrant cannot put English, put the English characters, so the registrar should help them to input. So the final result for received from the registrar should have both some English or ASCII character and non-ASCII character. So so the form or application form should have two parts, ASCII part and non-ASCII part. If the local user cannot input the ASCII part, the registrar should help them to do it. Thank you.
Thanks. So, thanks for the opinion. Very valuable. Let's see. So what I have, let me just briefly summarize the columns that I have. So I have the potential for a given proposal. I have the potential of impact to registrars, and we want to separate IDN-based registrars versus non-IDN-based registrars. I have impact to registries, to registrant, and to the users of Whois data. That includes both human users and interactive users. So that's what I have so far. Am I summarizing things correctly? Hello? Did I lost? Sorry.
This is Jeremy. I think that those are good columns, and maybe the first round of viewing the chart will instill some discussion and some commentary on what we're missing.
Okay. So does the working group want to give the staff some guidance in terms of what options we should explore to take a first pass? I'm hearing several options on the table already. I just want to give us some guidance in terms of which or what to investigate.
I mean, I think that the options that we've been talking about and even over the past few teleconferences about, you know, the kinds of overall systems or models that might exist are all appropriate.
Okay.
I mean, we can try and recap them here if you want, or I'm comfortable with letting you go back and you know, find the ones you can find, and then we'll see during our first discussion if anybody recalls anything that didn't get captured or wants to add something new. This is Jim Galvin, by the way. Sorry.
Thanks, Jim. So what I have is, I think that, let me just kind of briefly summarize the options that I think are currently on the table. So the first option is requiring a ASCII representation of the Whois data, and then in addition to that, make it optional for local language representation. So that's option one that I see. The option two I see is do not require ASCII representation. So registrants are free to enter their own formats, but it's up to the registrar to provide translation service and make that and make that ASCII. So that's the second option. The third option is very similar to the second option, but instead of requiring registrars to translate, the registrar just provide the point of contact for responding to translation services. So those are the three options that I think from past discussion that are on the table. So is that a correct summary, or are there any other options on the table?
I guess one this is Dave. One thing I want to do is carefully tease out which information we're talking about.
Okay.
And we had done a pretty good job thus far of identifying blocks of data. So we had I think a good discussion about sponsoring registrar and a good discussion about what we would treat contact information as a blob, I think was Jay Daly's term. And I think that would be valuable. And certainly, yeah, name server information, you know, would fall into that category. So, you know, we probably want to note that. My assumption is that, you know, all the kind of ancillary information that registrars, you know, apply when they do display is their own business. So.
Thanks, Dave. So what do you think, which data elements should we go through these matrix? What's your suggestion, I guess?
So I think it would be useful to call attention to the sponsoring registrar as one item. You know, there may be absolutely no need to, you know, or, you know, I mean, whether or not we have one or many languages for sponsoring registrar is one issue, and I think it's separate from registrar contact information, you know, technical contact information, administrative contact information. What is the consequence of having one of those be mandatory? For example, when we say must be ASCII, to use Aubrey's term, for contact information, is it absolutely essential that be applied for registrant, administrative contact, and technical contact, or are we going to be more liberal than that in the way that we analyze these? So I think the best thing to do, perhaps, is to just walk through the mandatory elements and try to come up with some granularity to see how far we want to delve down.
Okay, thanks. I'm taking a note on that. Any other thoughts?
This is Steve Metalitz. I thought we had determined that, and for some of these elements, I think we know the answer. The telephone numbers, I think people were saying on our last call, are always in Arabic numerals. And obviously there might be different ways of presenting that, I guess, but it's always in Arabic numerals. And I suppose that the email address, to the extent that's required, is, I mean, it's going to be what it's going to be. Today it's always an ASCII, or at least, but obviously in the future it won't always be an ASCII. So... and it's not really useful, I suppose, to have an email address that's in some other script be transliterated into ASCII. It wouldn't help you contact the person. So I'm just noting that there are probably some for which there isn't going to be as much as many options about how it's going to be presented. Now, when you get into registrant name and street address and so forth, then I think there probably are options. Thanks.
This is Jian Kang Yao. I think some of the information should be ASCII based. Some information should ask. Information should be mandatory. Should be necessary. Since we talk about internationalized, why we have internationalized? I think for internationalized there are two parts. One part is for those who don't understand the local language, can understand some information. The other is the localized, is for some local user to input their preferred languages. But for communication, I think some information should the ASCII information should be mandatory, and NASCII information should be optional. Thank you.
Thanks, Jinkang, and also thanks, Steve. I think we are not disagreeing with you, and I think it's not really a correct word of saying that. I'm just saying, acknowledging there's a difference of opinions on the in the whole working group, that it's helpful to do this matrix. I think the goal of the matrix is really one way to help us to understand each and different options better. I think that's I see the greatest benefit of doing the matrix. Responding to Steve, I think Dave is also not contradicting you either. What Dave is specifically saying, I think, talking about, for example, we have mostly spent time talk about like registering contact information, internationalize that. But what about administrative contact information? What about technical contact information? Should those be internationalized the same way as the registrant contact information? And I think we haven't really discussed about those yet. So those are my brief points.
This is Steve Metallitz. I agree with that. We should look at all those. But I'm just saying within those categories, for example, administrative contact information has a number of elements, and some of those would need to be internationalized, and some, I think, are already all in ASCII, such as telephone numbers. So that was the only point I was making.
Thanks. Thanks for that clarification. So I think the staff probably have enough guidance and can take a first pass at producing the matrix. And then, Jeremy, I think maybe the next step is before the next conference call, we'll send it out for deliberations. Now, also realizing that, what's the best way to do this? I think we may not be the best representation of the different ideas of this working group. Maybe we produce a preliminary matrix and it's up the working group member to fill it out. Who has the best interest in that? What do you think?
Hi, this is Aubrey. I think that's a good idea. I think getting some sort of polled result or something that shows, you know, some of the variety of viewpoints.
Yes.
And what, you know, whether it's standard deviations or what, are we really close in our opinions or are we not, could be an interesting exercise. You know, if we all think the same way, that's good. If we have wide deviation, then that might be interesting.
Okay.
More complicated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've done that in the past with various things. You know, ask people not only to answer yes or no, but the 1-5 scale, and then you can play all kinds of one-number games.
Thanks, Aubrey. Now, scene is almost one. We are run out the full hour. Jeremy, are there any agenda items you want to raise and discuss?
Not me specifically. I mean, if you feel armed to start putting that chart together, the matrix together, and send it around, I think that we'll be in good shape. Before we close the call, are there any other topics that we should bring up for either next time or for just a flag? Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for participating, and looking forward to seeing the work on the matrix.
Thanks.
Thanks.
So good to have a teleconference so soon after the meeting.
Indeed. Take care, everyone.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Okay.